हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्थमाविद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासवि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे. Okay, page 20. Okay. Guess we should read the verse. So. Lord Brahma concluded, the foremost manifestation of Krishna is Sankarsana, who is known as Ananta. He is the origin of all incarnations within this world, material world. Previous to the appearance of Lord Krishna, this original Sankarsana will appear as Baladev, just to please the Supreme Lord Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. The potency of the Lord, known as Vishnumaya, who is as good as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, will also appear with Lord Krishna. No, but we actually already did that.
Yes.
I was just going back so we have some context. Okay. Sorry. Sure. The potency, okay. This potency acting in different capacities captivates all the world, both material and spiritual. Right. So even your, attraction to Krishna, attraction to the devotees, the spiritual world, the activities of the spiritual world, that also, oh, that's clever. I never thought of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would have just used a spray gun. I was wondering how he was going to do it or sprinkling it like this. It works really good. And it doesn't get jammed up. And
Bengali spray gun.
Yeah, yeah. Works really good. It's mean. Okay, she'll appear with the different potencies in order to execute the work of the Lord. So, for those who are to attract those to Krishna, she's working as Yoga Maya to take those living entities away from Krishna, but ultimately to bring them back to Krishna. That's Mahamaya. So she does all these things. So it's interesting to see here is that that's why it's considered one deity: Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra. Three forms, but one deity. Right? They always go together. So the Lord, then his expansion, who Ananta, who takes care of all these different things, and then his potency is Swarup Shakti. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, in order to charm the eternal devotees and bewilder the enemies like Kamsa, Lord Krishna gave orders to Yoga Maya and Maya Devi. Here the word Vishnu or Maya refers to both energies of the Lord, but elsewhere in Srimad Bhagavatam it is stated that he gave orders to Yoga Maya. Being ordered by the Lord, Yoga Maya, along with her expansion, the external energy, Amshena, which bewilders the world, will appear. So he's saying is that it's referring to both, but in other places it says it's just talking about Yoga Maya, but it includes her expansion, Amshena, right? So her shadow. So that's the external. Because if you have her, you have the other. Like that. They will appear for the purpose of activities, karyarte. There are two types of activities, those of Yoga Maya and those of Maya. It was Yoga Maya who took the seventh child from Devaki's womb, came to the prison where Kamsa was born, and put Jashoda into deep sleep to exchange the children. These are activities of Yoga Maya, not Mahamaya. Mahamaya does not have the power to transfer her master Balaram to another womb. Jashoda's sleep is not the work of Mahamaya, because the scriptures say, beyond the fourth state of consciousness is the fifth state of prema. This is the state of dreaming of the associates of Hari. Their sleep and dreaming do not arise through the modes of nature. Mahamaya cannot extend her power to the eternal devotees of the Lord. Right? So the... fourth state is Turiya, right? And so, but that's conscious of the Lord. But being conscious of the Lord doesn't mean you're a devotee necessarily. You're coming to that transcendental platform. Now, specifically, it would mean, because otherwise, if you're conscious only temporarily, you're not actually that conscious as if you're conscious permanently. So that being, coming to that platform of Turiya, that fourth stage, that being the association of devotees, that will bring you to the fifth state of prema. So these great devotees, they're always functioning in that fifth state of prema. So you can also, if you just want to say generically, that's Turiya. But actually, it's beyond that. So does that make sense? Just like Anandamaya technically means devotion, prema. But it can also mean just understanding Brahman. So the impersonals like Sukadeva Goswami, the four Kumaras, they're on that platform of Brahman, so they're on the platform of Anandamaya. But then when they come in contact with Krishna consciousness, they go forward into prema. Does that make sense? So that's the place where you can stay. That's permanent. So in other words, prema is the permanent state of Turiya. Does that make sense? The form of Devaki's daughter to be killed by Kamsa was Mahamaya, not Yogamaya. Yogamaya does not involve herself with such sinful people. Mahamaya slipped from Kamsa's hand and... Oh. That's not good. These bugs eat bamboo. Oh. That bores. Yeah. Get in, so I have to spray it once we're done. Mm. Yeah. We should have sprayed it before we started. Okay. Okay, she slipped from Kamsa's hand and rose up in the sky, settled in many places with many names. She herself said, I will be born from the womb of Jashoda in Nanda's house in the 28th Yuga cycle at the end of the Vaivasvata Manvantara. As the dweller of the Vindhya Mountains, I will kill your evil companions. The bewilderment of the husbands and mothers-in-law of the married gopis in performing the Rasa-lila is an action of Yogamaya, not Maya. Because the husbands are not unfavorable towards the Lord or atheistic. If they were under the influence of Maya, then one would certainly observe in them hostility towards the Lord. In the first verse in the beginning of the description of the Rasa dance, the words Yoga Mayam Upasrita are used. On the other hand, demons like Duryodhana and Salva, though they see the Lord's Vishwarupa and Garuda, they never give respect to the Lord. They think he is one of the wicked Yavanas. This is the action of Maya, not Yogamaya, because one can see in their actions hostility to the Lord. Bewilderment of those hostile to the Lord is the action of Maya, and bewilderment of the devotees is the action of Yogamaya. When Jashoda saw Krishna's Vishwarup in his mouth, and when Ananda saw Krishna in Varuna Loka, because of their extreme affection as parents, though they saw reverential aspects of the Lord, they were completely unaffected by it. This is neither the action of Yoga Maya nor Maya. It is the nature of prema itself. But so they weren't bewildered. This is just what's of interest to them. So Krishna as the supreme, then that's not of interest to them. You know, he may be the supreme, but that's not what's interesting. You know, it's just like, let's say the child is grown up now. He's the prime minister of the country. You know, his mother comes to see him, or he gets him to come see her, whatever is the case. What does she want to talk about? How the country's run, or, you know, how about his health, how he's doing, you know, he's not doing, looking after this and that, and, you know, so many things like that. So it's not that she doesn't know he's the prime minister. It's just that that's not what's important. Does that make sense? Because it's not necessary for the relationship. For her being his mother, it's not necessary. So him being the Supreme Lord, it's not necessary that he's God for their relation to be nourished. Right? But in Vaikuntha, it is. Because the aspect of majesty, there must be majesties nourished because of his greatness. Because he's great. That's why. Does that make sense? It can have the aspect of sweetness also, but it goes back and forth. That's the thing. Does that make sense? This prema covers up knowledge of the Lord's powers, and with the ropes of spiritual possessiveness, binds up Krishna in their hearts more and more, right? Because can you possess God? No, you're possessed by God. So that's why you see, as you increase the sweetness, the possessiveness increases. Does that make sense? So that's why Braj is unique, because there the possessiveness is complete. He's there, Krishna. Right? In Dwarka, then he's the Supreme Lord. He happens to be there, so he's partially there. But in Vaikuntha, they belong to him. Does that make sense? So in other words, Vaikuntha is purely right wing, and Braja is left wing. And then you'll see that in Dwarka it goes back and forth.
In the Bhumandala, you can only do what the sun permits you to do.
The sun?
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That's why you're in the lower planets. They don't have to worry about the sun. With this increase in affection for the Lord, prema drowns the devotees completely in the great ocean of relishing sweetness of Krishna. But that means I think it's the last verse of Narottam Das Thakur's songbook, Prema. Prem Bhakti Chandrika, I think the last verse in there, Bhakti Shumar is explaining. It's about how he's fallen into this ocean of nectar of love for Krishna, right? And he's sinking in this ocean, and he doesn't know what to do because he doesn't know how to swim. So it just means he's destined to just be absorbed in this ocean of nectar like that. So that's the thing. That's why it says they drown completely. They're just totally absorbed in that. So the ones floating on the top, that's the ones, they're in the ocean, but they're interested in what's outside the ocean. Right? You know, so that's to be avoided. Like that. Yeah. To convey this unique quality of prema, the Tantra says, Krishna spread his Vaishnavi Maya in the form of parental affection. Extreme affection for a son is the unique quality of Vatsalya Prema. Yes.
This Prema is also a potency of Lord?
Yes, yes. But it's all part of the Swarup Shakti. So therefore you can talk about Yoga Maya or Radharani in just that. You don't have to, because these will be subdivisions of.
Because here it is separated and told.
Yes, it's separate. Just like Yoga, if you take Yoga Maya, she's the Swarup Shakti, but then Radharani is also Swarup Shakti. But Radharani will function on her own, like that. And so Yoga Maya will support or, you know, serve. Just like Balaram is everything, he supports Krishna. So Yoga Maya is everything, she supports Radharani. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada adds, in the Vedas it is said that the potencies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead are called by different names, such as Yoga Maya and Mahamaya. Ultimately, however, the Lord's potency is one, exactly as electric potency is one, although it can act both to cool and to heat. Does that make you understand what we're dealing with here? This is that we have to start being able to see the oneness and the difference. So as we go now, without appreciating or applying Chinta Beta Beta Tattva, we won't be able to appreciate what's being discussed. Because we have to be able to see that they're the same, but they're different. Right? They're the same, that's what the quality that they can all interact, but because they're different, that's why there's the unique interactions. Does that make sense? Over here. Well, that's the fly. What do you mean like this? Wow, shape changes. Okay. In the material world, this potency, working as Mahamaya, acts upon the conditioned souls to deprive them more and more of devotional service. It is said, Yaya samo hito jiva atmanam tri gunatmakam, Srimad Bhagavatam 175. In the material world, the conditioned soul thinks of himself as a product of triguna, the three modes of material nature. This is the bodily conception of life. Because of associating with the three gunas of the material potency, everyone identifies himself with his body. Someone is thinking he is a brahmana, someone a kshatriya, and someone a vaishya or shudra. Actually, however, one is neither a brahmana, a kshatriya, a vaishya, nor a shudra. One is part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, Mamaivam Saha. But because of being covered by the material energy, Mahamaya, one identifies himself in these different ways. When the conditioned soul becomes liberated, however, he thinks himself an eternal servant of Krishna. Jivar Surup Hoy Krishner Nitya Das. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 20.108. When he comes to that position, the same potency acting as Yoga Maya increasingly helps him become purified and devote his energy to the service of the Lord. Right, so when we're not thinking we're a servant of Krishna, Maya takes one deeper and deeper. Why? Because when we say, no, why would she do that? Because what happens if one goes deeper in Maya? Is it compatible with the nature of the jiva? No, because the jiva is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. So that means the material energy is going to be, the more you get involved, the more temporary it becomes, the more misery is there. Right? The less knowledge is there. The lower the consciousness. Right? You know, like a rock. How conscious is it? Right? What does it do? What results does it gain? Right? Not a lot. So that's the whole thing. The jiva becomes frustrated. Therefore, then it will turn, what's the alternative? Then in that window, they meet the devotees, they take up Krishna consciousness. Does that make sense? That's another reason why, if someone's not interested in Krishna consciousness, at that time you don't spend more time. Because that window that is there for others, you want to catch. And then when their window arrives, then they'll be willing to talk. So that may be you, maybe someone else, maybe now, maybe later. Does that make sense? Okay. Yeah. So then, as he gets frustrated and takes up Krishna consciousness, now Yoga Maya takes him the other way, into serving Krishna, more and more purifying himself, more and more being absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Understand? Because that nourishes. So in other words, Maya is also a servant of Krishna. Because we ask, why is this here? Why is all this happening? So that we ask that question. If we're asking, why is this all happening? This is all unfair. This is improper. Why is it? That's the point. You weren't asking before. Before it went... trying to get the... Yes, before it went south. Because the British saying just won't work. Yeah. Before it went south, we thought it was okay. We're only asking the question after it went south. You understand? When everything was going great, we're not going, why is this all going like this? Why is this all great? Why is this happening? We weren't asking. It's only when things go bad, then we ask. That's the whole point. So now, if we actually want to know, then it's because of Krishna consciousness. If we don't want to know, yes, then we'll think it's due to something else. I could have done things differently. It's this person's fault. You know, so many things. If only I had, you know, done this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like that. So that's the whole thing. It's that's what she's doing it for. So you'll ask, but then asking, then that's where you're supposed to introduce Krishna consciousness. Then you get a solution. Because if you don't introduce Krishna consciousness, you cannot get a solution. Right? Okay. You're just... Yes?
So as a sadhakas, are we under the Mahamaya or Yoga Maya or both?
We're under Yoga Maya, but it's not that she doesn't interact with us as Mahamaya if we are so deserving. You know, as it mentioned here. The form of Devaki's daughter to be killed by Kamsa was Mahamaya, not Yogamaya. Yogamaya does not involve herself with such sinful people. So if we're dealing in an improper way, Yogamaya will take care. If we're in a proper way, Yogamaya will take care. Does that make sense? So it'll go back and forth. But it's not that she's a devotee, so it's not that through the agency of the external potency we're not getting facilities for Krishna consciousness. Right. Does that make sense? So you see, just like, let's say, we get money for Krishna consciousness. Right? So what's the form of the money? Right? It comes in the form of, you know, either some variety of numbers, whether they're on a computer, on a piece of paper, but in any case, right? But the point is that itself is your computer internal potency, or is those bills Mahatma Gandhi's, Mahabhagavat, or, you understand? No, that's Maya. That's external potency. But because we're using it for Krishna, the effect is internal potency, is Lakshmi. So it's the internal potency coming through us in the form of the external. Does that make sense? So that's why Krishna is taking care, but through the medium of the external energy. Right? But it's his internal potency that's doing it. Does that make sense? But we see cases where, like Raghunath Das Goswami at Radhakund, there it's the Krishna's internal potency directly are taking care, no external potency. You know, Krishna's coming, you know, and telling the tigers to go away, and Radharani is covering his head with her cloth. So that's a different thing. So, or like Pallad Maharaj, when he's thrown off the mountain, then the Sringadev personally catches him. Like that. But like, let's say, the elephants can't step on him, and that's then through the external energy, then he's taken care. Because for Krishna, it's one energy. She just has different offices. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, let's say, the prime minister goes to the minister, and the minister either does it personally or gets their, you know, officers to take care of it. But in any case, it's one system. So if we see it all connected to Krishna, then in that way, it's Krishna taking care, it's Yogamaya. But if we don't see Krishna taking care, then it's a little bit more potluck. Does that make sense? But ultimately, it's going to be Krishna, because once one surrenders, then one actually doesn't get away. You know, he's the ultimate Santa. Knows all, sees all. Right. Is that okay? Thus, the Lord's potency, Vishnu Maya, has two features. Avaranika and Unmuka. When the Lord appeared, his potency came with him and acted in different ways. She acted as Yogamaya with Jashoda, Devaki, and other intimate relations of the Lord. And she acted in a different way with Kamsa, Salva, and the other Asuras. By the order of Lord Krishna, his potency Yogamaya came with him and exhibited different activities according to the time and circumstances. Kar yarte sambhavishyati. Yogamaya acted differently to execute different purposes desired by the Lord. So, in this way, coming from this, then one can say is the, how you say, for the devotee, then it's just Yogamaya. But she will be using different, she will act differently to execute different purposes. So it may appear as though it's Mahamaya, but it's actually Yogamaya. Does that make sense? We're just trying to avoid the sentimental aspect of how it's Yoga Maya is taking care, but she may be taking care through her offices. Does that make sense?
I'm not sure about the sentimental part, but
it does make sense. It does make sense. Yeah. Because sometimes you see new devotees, oh, it's all Krishna's mercy, and something's really not right. You know, they can't actually see. what's correct and what's not. So we're just making a distinction for there. But it's Yoga Maya who's controlling everything. That's why we say Krishna Karma. Because Mahamaya means it's by the external potency, that it's within the realm of karma. But devotees, they're not acting within karma. They're acting within, under Krishna's internal potency. But they, you know, how they're being dealt with, they deal with Yoga Maya. As Mahamaya, she'll reciprocate that way. You know, so in other words, the facility that they have that Krishna's given to them through Yoga Maya, if they deal with it as Mahamaya, she'll reciprocate as Mahamaya. But it's still Yoga Maya because the reciprocation will be to bring you closer to Krishna. Right? And also it said that Krishna will fulfill any desire of the devotee, but he won't fulfill the desire in such a way that it will create material consciousness. So that means then it has to be Yoga Maya. Does that make sense? Yeah.
I was thinking in the early days, Prabhupada made that comment with the bodies that you're not enough afraid of Maya, although they were so surrendered and doing great preaching.
Yes, because they were too comfortable to work with Maya. That's what we see, is that this term Yukta Vairagya can be used to very comfortably work with Maya. You know, oh, it's all for Krishna. But the point is do you see that it's Krishna? That's Yukta Vairagya. Yukta Vairagya isn't the engagement of the thing, it's the consciousness of its connection to Krishna. Right? And it's renunciation of the results of it. Does that make sense? So, let us say, I have a job, I go to my work and I get money. And so I could say Yukta Vairagya. Now, Yukta Vairagya would mean that I see that, okay, I'm supposed to serve Krishna, but I have a conditioned nature. My conditioned nature then situates me in a particular ashram, that therefore it's the appropriate thing to generate facility. Therefore, according to my nature, I can get this particular job, and from that I get money. And so then in this way, I see it as I'm performing my duties within the Varnashram system as defined by Krishna to take care of the family and myself in Krishna consciousness. Right? Does that make sense? So the engagement of the conditioning and all that is there. And so that's Yukta Vairagya. But Yukta is connected to Krishna. Vairagya, who's it for? The results are for Krishna. So it's not the activity. We take it, no, I'm dealing with the external energy. That's Yukta Vairagya. No, it's that I'm dealing with it in consciousness of Krishna without the desire for the results. But now, if I'm engaging, now if I'm saying, oh, I'm just being practical, it's Yukta Vairagya Prabhu, don't be such a fanatic, this, that, blah, like that. Now, but the point is Yukta, what's the connection to Krishna? You get the money, you take care of the family, where's Krishna in it? You know? You can say, no, but I go to the temple every day and all that. But do you see the connection between your work and facility and that sadhana? Or you see as, I have my sadhana and then I have my practical family life. If you see there, where's the yukta? That's sadhana. So the sadhana has been connected, nice. But, you know, of course there will be some, because in reality it is, but you'll get less benefit because you don't actually see the yukta. And the vairagya, you're getting the money, it's your money, you use it as you please. And now and again it may please you to give something to the devotees. So that part's connected. That was yukta. Now, when you gave that to the temple or the devotees, did you expect something back from that? Now you expect, okay, I gave a donation, now I should have some say in how the temple's run and all that. Where's the vairagya? Or if I don't, you know, I'm just using my day-to-day stuff, and where's the vairagya? I'm not seeing it in connection to Krishna. So I'm not eating to maintain the body so I can do service to Krishna. I'm eating because I want to eat. So where's the yukta vairagya? So we can see it's not in the activity. So technically, grihastha means yukta vairagya, grihamedi means it's not. It means if you want to use the strictest definition. So they're not different. We take it that, oh, it's a different thing. So therefore, devotees tend to not be enough afraid of the material energy, at how good she is at distracting one. You know what I'm saying? You know, in other words, from living into the temple to visiting the temple once a year on Janmashtami, basically in time for just to get darshan and prasad. But there's a good chance that that individual may not even notice the difference. So how did that happen? That's Maya. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the thing. One has to respect Maya. Because she is Krishna's potency. Okay, verses 26 to 69. Vasudeva negotiates with Kamsa to spare Devaki's life. Sukadeva Goswami... Where's the footnote? Where's the footnote?
Surasena.
Oh, okay, so we didn't miss it. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued. After thus advising the demigods and pacifying Mother Earth, the very powerful Lord Brahma, who is the master of all other Prajapatis and is therefore known as Prajapati Pati, returned to his own abode, Brahma Loka. Formerly, Surasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of right. So the demigods had gone to see. They were wondering why all this stuff was happening to them. You know, things like that. Mother, it means Bhumi Devi and all this. And so then they went to see Brahma. Brahma, then they all went to see Vishnu, and then he explained everything. So now Brahma, then after advising demigods, now he's gone back to his abode. Now, in the next thing, formerly Surasena, the chief of the Yadu dynasty, had gone to live in the city of Mathura. There he enjoyed the places known as Mathura and Surasena. Footnote 7. In his additional notes for this chapter, Srila Prabhupada writes, Surasenam's cha, the son of Kartavirya Arjuna, was Surasena, and the countries he ruled were also called Surasena. This is noted by Sanatan Goswami in the Vaishnav Toshani commentary. In regard to Mathura, we find this quotation. Mat yate tu jagat sarvam brahma jnanena yena va tat sara bhutam yad yasyam Mathura sa nigad yate. When a self-realized soul acts in his transcendental position, his situation is called Mathura. In other words, when one acts in the process of bhakti yoga, he may live anywhere, but actually he lives in Mathura, Vrindavan. So when it says that one should live in Mathura, that means that... Hair will go away. Means that one should be in transcendental consciousness. Then wherever you live, that's Mathura. Right? And then to assist that we're conscious of that, then we may physically live in Mathura, just to remind us to live in Mathura. Because you may be living in Mathura, but on Facebook you're in, you know, Alabama. Yes. Devotion to Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is the essence of all knowledge. And whatever such knowledge is manifested is called Mathura. And wherever such knowledge is manifested is called Mathura. Also, when one establishes bhakti yoga, excluding all other methods, one's situation is called Mathura. Yatra nityam sannihito harihi. The place where Hari, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, lives eternally is called Mathura. The word nitya indicates eternality. The Supreme Lord is eternal, and his abode is also eternal. Goloka eva niva satya kilatma bhutaha. Brahma Samhita 5:37. Although the Lord is always stationed in his abode, Goloka Vrindavan, he is present everywhere in fullness. This means that when the Supreme Lord descends on the surface of the earth, his original abode is not vacant, for he can remain in his original abode and simultaneously descend upon Mathura, Vrindavan, Ayodhya, and other places. He does not need to descend, since he is already present there. He simply manifests himself. He's already present, but he manifests so that he can be seen. So it's prakrit. Pastimes like aprakrita means we can't see him. He's already there. Like Lord Chaitanya is a prakrita. He's here performing his pastimes. He is here, but we may not be able to see him. So when we can see him, that's prakrita, right? Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Right? So we're clear on this. So therefore, then living in the Dham, then it's by remembering the Lord. So then living in the Dham makes you remember the Lord. So that's living in the Dham, worshipping the deity. Then you're living in the Dham because you're remembering the Lord. Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, then you're remembering the Lord. Chanting the holy name, then you're remembering the Lord. And where do you get all that? The association of devotees. So therefore, by associating with devotees, one's actually living in the Dham. Does that make sense? So one may then question, well, what's the advantage, therefore, of living in Mayapur as living in Tallahassee or anywhere else? Right? The difference is that if you forget, if you're remembering Krishna, it's non-different, but if you forget, you're in Tallahassee. Right? While in Mayapur, you forget, you're still here. Does that make sense? It doesn't mean the consciousness is somewhere else, but because you're still here, there's the chance you'll bump into someone or something or some situation that will again remind you of the Lord. And then you'll be living here again. Does that make sense? So like that. Okay, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Now begins the description of Krishna's appearance in Vasudeva's house. First, the suitable place of his birth is described. All perfect Krishna is eternally present in spiritual form in Mathura, in the material world. It is there that Krishna appears and becomes visible to the eyes. Right? So that's the point, he's visible to the eyes. That's where we can see. Right? Because unless you have prema, how do you see Krishna? So it's not that, oh, I'm on the liberated platform, I can see Krishna. Because then why don't the impersonalists see Krishna? Right? So it's only if he manifests himself, then you see Krishna. Mm-hmm. So you have to have a state in which you can see Krishna. So even if you're liberated. So the tatastha position means you're liberated. But there's no prema and no material consciousness. So therefore you have to be in a place where you can see Krishna and therefore see the activities that the devotees are engaged in serving Krishna to have an option to choose serving Krishna. But at the same time is those activities that are being performed by the devotees in serving the Lord who's manifest, then, as we discussed before, have their secondary nature. They have the mechanics and everything by which they function. And they produce a result. Then, being interested more in that result than in pleasing Krishna, then that takes on the material consciousness. That's the other side. That means seeing across the viraj. Because this side is seeing it in relation to Krishna. The other side is seeing it not in relation to Krishna. Does that make sense? Is that clear? So Krishna is always present. So that's the aspect. That's then how we come in. So therefore we put ourselves again in that same situation of being in Mathura. But now, trying to see Krishna, trying to do things for Krishna, that will elevate us the other way, take us through to prema. Does that make sense? So by misusing this position, it's brought us to material consciousness. By using it proper, it'll bring us back to that tatastha position and on to prema. Does that make sense? But when he appears, his expansions of Vaikuntha and Sweta Dweep join with him. After the pastimes are over, they return to their respective abodes. That they descend from Vaikuntha and later return, there is mentioned in scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.15. Right, so it says Krishna is already living in Mathura. He doesn't have to expand to there. But when he does come, all his expansions of all the other abodes, they all come and join with him. Footnote 8. The personality of Godhead, the all compassionate controller of both the spiritual and material creations, is unborn. But when there is friction between his peaceful devotees and persons who are in the material modes of nature, he takes birth just like fire, accompanied by the Mahatattva. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.2.15. Srila Prabhupada comments. When Lord Krishna appears on a mission, all his plenary portions accompany him. When he appears as the son of Vasudeva, there are differences of opinion about his incarnation. Some said, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Some said, he is an incarnation of Narayana. And others said, he is the incarnation of Kiridakshai Vishnu. But actually, he is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna's tu Bhagavan Swayam. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.28. And Narayana, the Purushas, and all other incarnations accompany him to function as different parts of his pastimes. Mahad Amsa Yukdaha indicates that he is accompanied by the Purushas, who create the Mahatattva. Tanva? It is confirmed in the Vedic hymns. Mahantam Vibhum Atmanam. Lord Krishna appeared just like electricity. When there was friction between Kamsa and Vasudeva and Ugrasena, Vasudeva and Ugrasena were the Lord's devotees, and Kamsa, a representative of the Karmis and Jnanis, was a non-devotee. Krishna, as he is compared to the sun. He first appeared from the ocean of the womb of Devaki, and gradually he satisfied the inhabitants of the places surrounding Mathura, just as the sun enlivens the lotus flower in the morning. After gradually rising to the meridian of Dwarka, the Lord set like the sun, placing everything in darkness, as described by Uddhava. So these analogies, then they are how the Lord functions. Otherwise, why would an analogy work? Right? So in other words, the analogy is also coming from Krishna. So that's why they'll work, is because they have some element that is what, allegorious to Krishna? Allegorical to Krishna. Does that make sense? Yeah. Srila Prabhupada adds, it is understood that Mathura city is the transcendental abode of Lord Krishna. It is not an ordinary material city, for it is eternally connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vrindavan is within the jurisdiction of Mathura, and it still continues to exist. Because Mathura and Vrindavan are intimately connected with Krishna eternally, it is said that Lord Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Vrindavanam parityajya param ekam nagacchati. At present, the place known as Vrindavan in the district of Mathura continues its position as a transcendental place. And certainly anyone who goes there becomes transcendentally purified. Navadvip Dham is also intimately connected with Brajabhumi. Srila Narottam Das Thakur therefore says, Sri Gaura Mandala Bhumi Jeva Jani Chintamani Tarhoi Brajabhumi Vas. Brajabhumi refers to Mathura Vrindavan, and Gaura Mandala Bhumi indicates Navadvip. These two places are non-different. Therefore, anyone living in Navadvip Dham, knowing Krishna and Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to be the same personality, lives in Brajabhumi, Mathura Vrindavan. The Lord has made it convenient for the conditioned soul to live in Mathura, Vrindavan, and Navadvip, and thus be directly connected with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Simply by living in these places, one can immediately come in contact with the Lord. There are many devotees who vow never to leave Vrindavan and Mathura. This is undoubtedly a good vow, but if one leaves Vrindavan, Mathura, or Navadvip for the service of the Lord, he is not disconnected from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because he's doing the Lord's service, so therefore wherever he goes, that's also Mathura. Does that make sense? So taking the vow that one will never leave Vrindavan, that's good. But it doesn't mean that one who leaves on service to the Lord has left Vrindavan. Does that make sense? Because the consciousness is there, therefore then they're always absorbed. Anyone who... At any rate, we must understand the transcendental importance of Mathura Vrindavan and Navadvip Dham. Anyone who executes devotional service in these places certainly goes back home, back to Godhead, after giving up his body. Thus the words Mathura Bhagavan Yatra Nityam Sannihito Harihi are particularly important. A devotee should fully realize this instruction to the best of his ability. Whenever the Supreme Lord personally appears, he appears in Mathura because of his intimate connection with this place. Therefore, although Mathura and Vrindavan are situated on this planet, they are transcendental abodes of the Lord. Right? So that's the point. It is the transcendental realm. It is the place in which someone who doesn't have love for Krishna can see Krishna. Does that make sense? That. Therefore, that's the position. So we want to come to that position and then progress from there to prema. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Some time ago, Vasudeva, who belonged to the demigod family or to the Sura dynasty, married Devaki. After the marriage, he mounted his chariot to return home with his newly married wife. Right? So you have the marriage ceremony, and then the last day you do the various homas, yantra rohana, so that means then you get on the chariot, and then you go to his house, right, where then they'll be received, and there's other pujas and that there, and that completes the marriage ceremony. So the marriage ceremony is complete, means completed through the boys' party going to the marriage, the preliminaries, the marriage itself, the concluding activities, then going to his house, and then further concluding activities. Then that's the full marriage ceremony. So he's only carrying on, so that's the natural thing. That's why it would be mentioned. Because if you mention that he got on the chariot to go to his place, that means then all the rest of the marriage is already contained. Right? Because otherwise, if the boy just goes to the girl's house, gets on a chariot, and goes back to his house, he's not married to the girl. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. Kamsa, the son of King Ugrasena, in order to please his sister Devaki on the occasion of her marriage, took charge of the reins of the horses and became the chariot driver. Right? Because he's the brother, so he wants to do something nice like that. You know, because the father has his place. But, you know, the son, then he can move around, so he represents the father, but at the same time as he's able to move like that. All right. Also, he would be in a junior position, so if he comes to the house, then he's not seen, you know, it won't disturb the mood. Well, then if the father and the mother, they come, then it changes the whole flavor. Then them being, you know, it's the marriage is there, seen, therefore it won't be so much. Does that make sense? So in other words, they go, they're together at the girl's house, but not at the boy's house. Does that make sense? He was surrounded by hundreds of golden chariots. Devaki's father, King Devaka, was very affectionate to his daughter. Therefore, while she and her husband were leaving home, he gave her a dowry of 400 elephants nicely decorated with golden garlands. He also gave 10,000 horses, 1,800 chariots, and 200 very beautiful young maidservants, fully decorated with ornaments. Srila Prabhupada comments, the system of giving a dowry to one's daughter has existed in Vedic civilization for a very long time. Even today, following the same system, a father who has money will give his daughter an opulent dowry. Right? So notice here in this, in the verse itself, in the comment, the dowry is for the girl. Right? It may be given to the charge of the boy, but it's so that he's taking care of it for the girl. Does that make sense? Nowadays, then they think it's for the boy. That's the problem. But it's not. It's for the girl. A daughter would never inherit the property of her father, and therefore an affectionate father during the marriage of his daughter would give her as much as possible. So one can say, why doesn't she inherit? You want to wait until you're 70 years old before you get anything? Like that. Here, she's just gotten married. That's when you need the inheritance, right? Right? So she gets it then. The son has to wait until, you understand? So what's not to like about this arrangement? Right? Plus, it's here now. You don't know what'll be there in the future. So that's guaranteed. You have it. While they say, oh, you'll get it inherited, it may not be there. You understand? So the Vedic system takes care of both according to the mentality. So they both get, but it's according to mentality. So therefore, the form of it will be different. So, yeah. A dowry, therefore, is never illegal according to the Vedic system. Here, of course, the gift offered as a dowry by Devaka to Devaki was not ordinary. Right? So why they're saying that? Because in the modern, they try to get rid of it, this, that, blah, like that. Because Devaka was a king, he gave a dowry quite suitable to his royal position. Even an ordinary man, especially a high-class Brahmana, Kshatriya or Vaishya, is supposed to give his daughter a liberal dowry. Immediately after the marriage, the daughter goes to her husband's house. And it is also a custom for the brother of the bride to accompany his sister and brother-in-law to exhibit affection for her. Right? Because otherwise then she'll feel she's left the house and now nobody cares. Right? You know, as soon as they leave and all that, then everyone goes back inside, puts on the music, yeah, like that. You know, just to make sure then the brother goes along so that they don't, you know, that kind of problem is not perceived. Yeah? This system was followed by Kamsa. These are old customs in the society of Varnashrama, which is now wrongly designated as Hindu. But it's just that it's Varnashram. Hindus follow Varnashrama. We're following Varnashram. So in that way, if you want to say Varnashram is Hindu, we're Hindu. But technically, we're all practicing Varnashram. So therefore, Saddharma, you know, and then we're practicing in a connection with the Lord, so Saddharma, because Varnashram is Dharma. And that way, if you say that's the common point, Saddharma, that the Vaishnavs and the Hindus will all agree, because everybody, you know, will agree with Saddharma, Sanatan Dharma, like that. They're all cool with that one. These long-standing customs are nicely described here. Right? So he's described, because these are just standard. This is the way it works. That's the whole point, is that these are the recommended systems. We follow them. Because when you're dealing, you have obligations, that your conduct that must be performed. So there's physical conduct, then there's the emotional, the social, intellectual, the spiritual, all these varieties of conduct must be performed. So these are then on the social platform, like this. Right? Does that make sense? So this is what's done. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Oh, beloved son, Maharaj Parikit, when the bride and bridegroom were ready to start, conch shells, bugles, drums, and kettle drums all vibrated in concert for their auspicious departure. So in concert means all together nicely, so it made a nice sound. It wasn't a cacophony?
Cacophony.
Cacophony. Right? While Kamsa, controlling the reins of the horses, was driving the chariot along the way, an unembodied voice addressed him. You foolish rascal, the eighth son of the woman you are carrying will kill you. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. An unseen voice spoke to Kamsa. The eighth offspring of she whom you drive on the chariot will kill you. The word garba is used instead of putra, son, so that when Kamsa saw the eighth children to be a daughter, he would not be suspicious. Because right? If they said son, then if it's a daughter, then he'd think, why is it a daughter? It said it'll be a son. Worrying that Krishna could not kill Kamsa if he were so affectionate to Devaki, the Devatas delivered this message from the sky so that Kamsa would antagonize Devaki. Right? So in other words, if Kamsa was so affectionate to Devaki and always dealt like such a nice brother, then Krishna wouldn't be able to kill him. You know, he's the big demon that all his demon supports are all harassing all the demigods. So he wouldn't be able to kill him because he's such a nice, you know, uncle. Like that. And so that would upset Devaki, right? Because he's for the mother, then her brother is important. So therefore, you can't do that. It would upset her. But, how do you say? Like killing Kamsa did upset, how do you say? The ants on that side who were married to Kamsa, right? And so that then upset Jarasandha, and that started so much problem, right? So just to see that, therefore they delivered the message, one, that it's just the child, and then two, from the aspect that if didn't make Kamsa inimical, then how would he kill him and all his demons? That makes sense. Vasudev had heard from his mother that when he was born, there were sounds of drums announcing the future birth of an incarnation of the Lord. Vasudev told this to Devaki. Thus hearing the voice from the sky, she became blissful, for she understood that the Lord would appear in her womb. Right. So it's, what do you call it? So Vasudev heard these. He was explained that that means an incarnation will come. So then when it says that, said this is that she knows that that incarnation is this eighth son. Thus hearing the thus hearing the voice from the sky, she became blissful, for she understood that the Lord would appear in her womb. Also through the message was understood that the six sons of Marichi, being killed by Kamsa, would be delivered from their curse. Right, because Baladev just transfers, so he's not messing with him. Like that, you know, because Krishna, it's his pastime to do, but for Baladev, he's a little more formal, like that. And then the Satgarbhas, then they're under a curse that they'll be killed in this way, because I think in their previous life, then Kamsa was their father or something, you know, so and they're supposed to be killed by their father. It's a curse. It goes way back to, I think, Hiranyakashipu or it goes way back and it comes down. So it takes a few forms before it finally gets to this. So.
Begin from the laughed at Lord Brahma.
They laughed at Lord Brahma. Okay, they got that. Then
they were born as
Demons.
Demons.
And then they were cursed by that demon father. They'd be killed by their father. Something like this. It just kept going until now they're delivered from the curse.
It's interesting because in the pastime of Ganga Devi in Shantanu, it's the same thing. Somebody, Lord Brahma was upset and cursed Ganga Devi that she would have to take birth and all her children would
And then, the Vasus. Then they, because they had to take birth, so then they thought, well, we'll take birth from her rather than some mortal.
But they got it from stealing the Kamadini cow.
So it's all very nicely complicated. You know? That's the thing about the Vedic. It's not so like that. You know, take Hollywood a while to catch up. So it's all nicely arranged, and the demigods are arranged here. They're you know, the unembodied voice, and so all these things are coming together at once. So that previous thing with Kamsa, I mean the previous thing with Vasudeva about the sun and Devaki here, then the Satgarbhas. Yeah. And all that. So all this is all nicely arranged. Okay. Yeah.
There's a word for it in Greek theater. They call it Deus ex machina. That there's just a powerful force from that completely upsets the plot by just inserting into the story.
Okay. So you don't have to. You don't have to have the guy throwing a rock at a can, and he's so expert at it, so later on when he throws a rock at something, then you accept it.
Yeah.
It just inserts itself.
Yeah, like a bolt of lightning.
Okay. Very good. Thank you. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai
Nityananda Gaura Premanandi.